On episode 97 of the Corner Sports Podcast, this is our final regular season episode for the fantasy football season. We'll talk about the Deshaun Watson debut in a redemption game in Houston, the Jimmy Garoppolo injury in San Francisco, and what that means to the 49er weapons. Baker asks for a release and is picked up by the Rams. Can he save his career? All next on the Corner Sports Podcast. All right. Welcome on in. Welcome on back. This is episode 97 of the Corner Sports Podcast. This is Christian, the Commish Riley, joined by my co-host, Paul, place kicker, Kaler. Rolling with two again, although this one is not after a Browns loss.
Surprisingly, no.
Very surprisingly. Brandon Cooks-Kuglin will not be joining us for our episode today. He may be calling in as a guest in a little bit when we discuss some Browns. But we have a lot to talk about going into the final week of the regular season. But before we dig into that, Paul, how was your fantasy football week and week of NFL football looking back at week 13?
Well, I'd be remiss if I was not to start with this episode by saying happy motherfucking birthday.
Thank you, sir.
We are recording on Christian Riley, the commish's birthday.
On my birthday.
Is he not the most selfless commish in the history of commishes?
Well, I figure that I really need to put my nose down when it comes to fantasy football, considering the week of fantasy football that I had. I feel like I don't get to celebrate my birthday when out of my 12
you
leagues.
You feel like you haven't earned it?
I haven't earned it. Like, I feel like out of my 12 leagues, if you go 1-11, as I did this week, the worst week I've ever had in 18 years of playing fantasy football. Wow. My fantasy football career is a legal adult, and I've never had a single week this bad.
That's really something to wrap your mind around. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, it's
bad. I mean, luckily, I'm coming off of a vacation in Cancun where I didn't pay a single minute of attention to my fantasy teams. So I didn't realize that this happened until last night after I got home and finally like scrolled through my rosters and made my waiver claims. But I'm glad I was distracted, because if I was watching my fantasy teams this weekend, I would have been very upset. But instead, I spent my birthday weekend on the beaches in Cancun, and frankly, I didn't notice, so I didn't care.
It ain't all bad.
It's kind of, I look back on it, I'm like, well, damn, that would have sucked. But I guess if you're going to set a personal record that bad, there are worse ways to do it.
I completely agree.
It is my birthday, and it is the start of my Jim Brown year.
Number 32.
Turning 32 today.
Goat year.
So I am selflessly dedicating this to all of our listeners, helping them reach the playoffs that many of my teams will not. So hopefully I can do better for your teams as listeners than I'm doing for my own as a host here, considering I'm having the worst fantasy football season I've ever had.
How are you coming to grips with all of that?
I'm already like making new spreadsheets and looking at where the fuck I went wrong. And
you doing mock drafts for 23 yet? Mock drafts?
Not yet. I'm not going that deep into it, but I put a spreadsheet together of looking at where people were drafted, or where all of my drafts were, like first rounds at the top, second rounds, next one down, third round picks, like each one down. And I realize that the majority of my finger pointing can be thrown on Kyle Pitts, Javonte Williams, and Allen Robinson.
Yeah, I see it now.
Those three picks were three of my four most owned players, and they were all taken within like the first six rounds of most of those drafts. So that's where I'm pointing the finger, and it's not the pointer finger.
You just made the list.
Yeah, that's definitely list worthy, but I still need to figure out what I'm going to do with some of those players looking into next year. But I learned a lot of lessons when it comes to having a year this bad. I mean, I ignored situations when it comes to players like Alvin Kamara in the Saints offense. I had no idea that he would be not worth the first round pick that he was, but he's in a bad offense that I overlooked, and he's 27, which I overlooked.
That's the magic number for running backs, right?
Learn from that mistake. Deontay Johnson, I drafted him in the mid rounds a lot. I knew that Pittsburgh offense would be terrible, but I figured, How could Kenny Pickett be worse than Big Ben was last year? Learn from that lesson. It could always get worse, especially when there's an emerging rookie that takes the fold. So there are lessons to be learned here. I'm going to be better next year for my own teams.
Well, you better be.
I mean, yeah, if I'm not, then I'm going to be
on the plus side, I think it is. Fantasy career. We've been talking about this all season long, and I think it's important to acknowledge the fact that officially you have locked up the top overall pick in the Sleeper Dynasty draft.
Yes.
So that's a big one.
That's been a competition between me and you all year.
And you finally got me.
Our tankathon.
Yep.
It's not like a tank for Trevor, like they did for Trevor Lawrence.
Not quite. Suck for luck.
Suck for luck. Yep. It's not that sort of deal, because I don't know who I'm going to take at number one overall. But as we mentioned in our pre-show, we're both in for very good drafts in our Dynasty League, because you have 3 first-round picks. Mm-hmm. I have the top overall pick.
Yep.
This could get fun. But how was your week overall?
Reeling it back on into that. Actually, believe it or not, for the first time, 13 weeks took me to go 7-0.
Wow.
In all my fantasy leagues. So
just a clean sweep.
Clean slate, actually. And it's actually kind of a microcosm of how the second half of my fantasy season is going. I'm not trying to pile on here with your grievances. I know we got our Festivus poll up and you're airing your grievances about fantasy football here, but not trying to pile on to you. But when you look at it, I started off the first 7 weeks of the fantasy season at 17-27 overall.
Not great.
And this week, for the first time all year, I'm above 500 cumulative. So I'm 44-42 for a 51.16 winning percentage. And I guess it's a good time to get hot. Playoffs start in a little over a week from now. So, I mean, hey, I'll take what I can get. I mean, honestly, like, you know, the 2 of those wins are Dynasty League wins, and those are useless. But, hey, 7-0 still looks good on paper, and I'll take that. It means 5-0 in redraft, so setting up nice for the playoffs, hopefully.
Yeah, I do the same thing that you do of keeping track of our records week in and week out. Out of my 12 teams, my best week was week 4, where I only went 7-5. And that's tied with week 12, where I also went 7-5. I have 1 week that was this week of 1-11, and I have 3 different weeks that were 4-8 or worse. And all of the rest were 6-6 or 7-5, all the way down the list.
Purgatory.
I never just caught. I usually stay around 500 the first month.
Usually do what I did this year.
Yes. I usually start off under 500 the first month, then I get my feet under me and take off. But while I'm looking at all of the drafts that I did this fall, I'm realizing that I made a lot of right moves on the free agent wire that kept me afloat, but I was missing so much talent at the start of so many drafts. I mean, I had Kyle Pitts in like 9 of my leagues, and every one of them, the worst pick I took, the latest I took him in any of them was 4.1. So that was a top 3 round pick in 3/4 of my leagues gone. And even when he was there, he was not
black hole. He's a black hole. Yeah.
Black hole in the lineup. And then it's bad when you're relieved when they're like, okay, he's not playing anymore. And you're like, all right, free spot in the lineup.
I can finally release this guy.
So that, I mean, that's been the story of my season, and it's definitely something that I'm going to learn from as we approach the 2023 season. I'm going to have a lot of time to look back on this, because I don't like losing. I don't think anybody does.
Really?
Yeah, it's not a good time. I'm not used to this.
But you know what? On the plus side, everybody else in the league had fun. So
yes, there's a few leagues that are loving to pile on what's happening to me right now.
I'm not surprised by that at all. Do you have any leagues that you are... have a playoff spot locked up, or your win to get in this week or something like that?
I mean, there's, out of my 12 leagues, I am eliminated in 6 of them. So there's still 6 of them that are technically alive. It's either win and in, or win and need some help to get in, including yours.
Yeah, I've been out of that one. So
your league, I think I need to win over the, I'm the 7 seed. I need to beat the 6 seed, and I need to outscore them by like 40.
It's not impossible.
So I need to go off. I need his team to suck, and I can take his playoff spot directly from him. There's a lot of situations like that. There's only one team out of all of mine that is sitting at 11-2 right now, just sitting pretty in the top spot.
Well, hopefully you can make some noise here in the final week and carry that into playoffs, maybe recoup a little bit of money.
Do you have any of your fantasy leagues that start their playoffs this week?
This week? No, I do not.
Okay. Because I saw some people debating this on Twitter, and I thought it was an interesting conversation that there are actually fantasy football leagues right now that are starting their playoffs with multiple teams on bye weeks.
And they just completely disregard the 18th week of the season. So they just, like, the league shifted to 18 weeks a couple years ago, and they're just like, we're keeping the same format.
They just kept their schedule the same where their playoffs go 14, 15, 16.
There are six teams on bye this week.
Six teams.
With some real studs out, too. Jonathan Taylor's one of them. Yeah. You know?
I couldn't imagine signing up for a league and being okay with first-round picks not being available due to bye weeks in the first week of the playoffs.
Uh-uh.
And it made me think of this question for you, because I saw the situation tweeted by somebody in fantasy football Twitter, and it was they were actually mad for the opposite reasons that I had disagreed with their reason of being mad. But they said that their playoffs were set for weeks 14, 15, 16, and their commissioner changed it last week to make it 15, 16, 17.
Okay.
They were upset because they thought that the commissioner only changed it, and mind you, they noted that the league voted for it 7-5.
They voted in season for it?
They voted in season 7-5 to change it to make the playoffs 15, 16, 17. In this scenario, would you be in favor of a in-season change of a league setting like that?
I mean, something like that, I'd say better late than never.
Yeah.
I know Kamara hasn't been what we thought he was going to be, but still, he's a stud name that's on bye. And like we said, Jonathan Taylor Thomas is on bye. Absolutely. I mean, you start... Fantasy playoffs are not meant to be played while there's bye weeks going on.
No.
I mean, even if it is a late season change, which obviously you try to avoid in most or all situations as a commissioner, I still think a change like that is better late than never because, in no world does that make any sense. Please rationalize that to me. No. Having your playoffs start week 14 and then play 15, 16, and then there's two NFL weeks in which you are not playing fantasy football, or there's no fantasy football relevance besides... outside of daily?
I don't understand why people wouldn't want there to be relevance in week 17.
No.
How many teams are doing anything to not win their games in week 17?
None, usually.
I mean, I haven't seen that. I mean, even if you take it back a year and make it week 16, how many teams are not doing anything, are not playing their starters for two full weeks at the end of a season?
Like, maybe the 06 Colts.
And even then, I don't think that happened.
Probably not. Two full weeks of resting guys does not happen.
No team does that. There's no reason for any fantasy football league to not have relevance in week 17, now that there's 18 weeks in the season. So when I saw this situation tweeted out into the depths of fantasy football Twitter, and I saw how mad that this guy was that an in-season change was made, which usually 99% of the time, I would say that a league vote means that setting goes in to affect the next year.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking at a situation that is benching fantasy stars for the first week of the playoffs, I think that change needs to be made as soon as possible. And it should have been, I wouldn't join a league that said that the fantasy playoffs were going to start week 14.
I wouldn't join one. I sure as hell wouldn't spend money on one. Absolutely. Damn sure.
So speaking of the playoffs, our Browns kept themselves the quote-unquote in the hunt part of the graphic this week.
Our favorite three words, in the hunt.
Now, mind you, I didn't see any of this.
You're lucky.
But the biggest storyline out of all of it was the return of Deshaun Watson. What was your takeaway from Deshaun Watson's debut this weekend?
First game in 700 days. What do you expect? What's he supposed to look like? I mean, yeah. I'm not moved by this performance. The offense looked terrible. I think the overarching concern is how bad the offense as a whole looked. Certainly concerned with that. Happy to see the ball carry numbers for both Chubb and Hunt, but the fact that the offense was able to generate so little success, ball movement, success, just overall. That part was concerning. Obviously, that revolves around the quarterback, as go most offenses. But at the end of the day, this game went exactly how we thought it was going to go. The Browns were going to underperform on offense, and they were going to beat a vastly inferior team. And that's exactly what happened. Now, if you could have guessed that there was going to be two defensive touchdowns and a special teams touchdown, that's another story. I would have maybe thought that in a game like this, the Browns would win, like, I don't know, 16-6 on field goals. Mostly field goals and maybe a score, but so the defense, to see them ball out was a very welcome sight, and the special teams as well, because we know both of those units have been utter garbage all season long. And like I said, playing an inferior opponent, we can take that with a grain of salt. But it was nice to see those two faces of the game step up in a year where the Browns offense has consistently done their job
and the defense and special teams have not.
Exactly. So hopefully, and I mean, the defense has looked a little bit better in like last four out of five weeks, something like that.
Those two units, the defense and special teams, accounted for 21 of the points.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun to watch. I'll take it. The offense looked terrible. It is what it is. Deshaun, I think, was 12 for 22. First game in 700 days. What do you, I mean, what more? You can't expect him to come out and look like a world beater. He's going to get his form back in time. How soon that's going to be, I don't know. This week's game, I mean, really every game from here on out is very intriguing, if for no other reason than to see how Deshaun Watson progresses in Kevin Stefanski's offense and in a Cleveland Browns uniform. But, I mean, the Browns walked away with the win, as they should have. They covered as well. And big game against Cincy this week.
I do have an interesting stat for you when it comes to what Deshaun Watson did. Because as I said, I did not watch a single minute of the game because I was doing vacation things as opposed to worrying about the Browns dressing me up.
You should do that more often.
It's a great time. Everyone should take that advice. But Deshaun Watson was 12 of 22, which was actually the second least amount of pass attempts in Deshaun Watson's entire career. The only other time that he's had less than 22 passing attempts was week 8 of 2018, his sophomore season, when Houston beat Miami 42-23 and Deshaun had 5 touchdowns.
That's a high percentage of passes going for touchdowns.
Basically, half of his touch or a quarter of his passes went for touchdowns as the Texans blew out the Dolphins in his sophomore season. But if you look at the first game of Deshaun Watson's career, a 29-7 blowout loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars, where Deshaun Watson went 12 of 23, so almost identical when it comes to passing and completions, 102 yards, 1 touchdown, no picks, sacked 4 times. This week, 12 of 22, 131 yards, no touchdowns, 1 interception, sacked once. Almost identical stat lines. You take away 1 touchdown, you add 3 sacks, and those 2 stat lines are the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially like Deshaun Watson is starting his career over.
Oh, wow. No kidding. I mean, this is basically like, I mean, this is the second week one for Cleveland this year, if you look at it that way. I think most of us kind of do.
And in the third week of his rookie season, 22 of 33, 301 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. In week 4, 25 of 34, 283, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick. Week 5, 16 of 31, 261, 5 touchdowns, no picks.
God damn. Jeez.
After the third week of the season, and mind you, he got hurt his rookie year and was on injured reserve from week 8 on.
Mm-hmm.
But after week 3, he didn't throw any less than 3 touchdowns. 4, 5, 3, 4.
Mama.
So how long are you giving Deshaun Watson to essentially shake off the rust? Now, a lot of people say they're going to give him to the end of the year in what they've already written off as a lost season. Other people are saying it's not a lost season. We're fighting for the playoffs. Put Jacoby Brissett back in. Where's your patience level with Deshaun Watson right now?
I think I'm extremely patient. I'm not going to go quite to the extent that some people are going and advocate for Jacoby to play. He's come in. He's done his thing. He's done his job and done admirably at his job, and I thank him for that. But the Jacoby days are over. I am, however, going to be patient with Deshaun knocking off the rust. I can't say that I'll give him the whole rest of the season, all 6 games, but it'd be nice to at least see glimpses, you know, between now and then. I'm not saying that he needs to come out by week 18 and be the world beater that he is, or show us that he is the world beater that he used to be. But I think that if he shows glimpses, if Kevin Stefanski can run an offense that is capable of maximizing his talents, that's the stuff that I'm looking for. The win-loss column, I mean, obviously important. I'm hoping for the Browns to get some wins the next couple of weeks. We got Cincy, we got Baltimore, and then some winnable games against New Orleans and Washington and Pittsburgh. That's big. I mean, the Browns can still make some noise here in the playoff hunt. Not trying to be that guy, but things can work out that way. If we can just see glimpses of complimentary football, the Browns now have an elite quarterback to go with an elite running game, to go with an above-average offensive line, and I just want to see those 3 things come together. And they've got talent on the outside, too, with Cooper and DPJ. And Njoku, when he's on the field, has been a playmaker all season long. So I just want to see the offense come together with Deshaun Watson. We've seen it we've seen it come together with Jacoby, and they've done great with Jacoby. Now let's see it elevate to another level. And like I said, I'm not expecting them to win out, not asking them to win out. But if we can just see glimpses of what we can expect going forward over the next 4 or 5 years with Deshaun Watson, then I'm happy with that result.
Yeah, that makes sense. That puts the expectation at a realistic point, I think, for all of us. I think the people that are saying that Deshaun's a quarter of a billion-dollar man, he needs to carry this team to the Super Bowl in year one after not playing in 700 days, that's a bit much. You're setting yourself up for some takes that are really going to age poorly. So looking at the comparison from the start of Deshaun Watson's career in Houston and how similar his week one was as a 21-year-old and how similar it was to his first game in Cleveland, looking ahead, what do you think that this means for the Browns' weapons? Now, I know that you're a DPJ guy.
You already know.
You love that guy. And I looked at the box score and I saw that Amari Cooper had like 10 targets, 9 targets. Very healthy share of targets from a very talented quarterback. What is your view on what Deshaun Watson means for these two receivers and David Njoku?
Not trying to go overboard, but I think that this Browns offense is viable enough when it's clicking on all cylinders as we expect it to be with Deshaun Watson once things get rolling. I think it can support all of those guys and Nick Chubb. I think it can support Cooper. I think it can support Njoku. I think it can support DPJ. And I think it can support Nick Chubb. And I expect that to carry on, hopefully, towards the end of the season. Should be an interesting fantasy playoffs for anybody that might have a Browns offensive player. Certainly a volatile situation, I'll say that, because we don't know quite when that offense is going to click. Could happen this week against Cincy. Could happen week 18 against Pittsburgh. Could possibly not happen at all until week 1 of 23. We don't know when that point's going to happen. I think we can safely assume that point is going to happen at some point. We know that Kevin Stefanski is an offensive mastermind. I think we've accepted that despite the shortcomings of his teams in recent years with locker room issues and stuff like that. But all that notwithstanding, I have enough faith in Stefanski as an offensive mind and the Browns offense as a whole. Still have a decent offensive line, which is obviously huge. You got to win in the trenches no matter what. No matter how much talent you got around you, you have got to win in the trenches. We've seen teams foil great talent with poor offensive line play. Andrew Luck comes to mind.
Colts.
Yep. There you go.
We both knew who to blame for that one.
Too easy. But I do think that this offense should be a top five offense for the near future in the NFL. And I think it can support all those weapons, both in real life and in fantasy football.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that it's interesting that there were enough targets to go around for these wide receivers when Deshaun Watson only threw pretty much a career low in passing attempts.
And there was no Njoku, but yeah.
And no Njoku. But you also had 2 defensive touchdowns and a special teams touchdown. So your offense didn't even need to touch the ball to put up points. That's 21 points before your offense even takes the field.
Shout out DBJ, by the way. Punt return.
There you go. That's your boy. One thing I did want to point out when it comes to the Browns offense is I think they're back to running the damn ball.
What makes you say that?
The fact that Chubb goes 17 for 80. Not sexy, but it got it done. Hunt goes 9 for 56, the most carries he has had since the Cincinnati game. And earlier in the season, when the Browns were really riding Chubb and Hunt, and they were having all of these close losses, where they had the heartbreaker against the Jets, when they had the inexplicable loss to Atlanta, and then when they missed that field goal against the Chargers, to lose all of those 3 games in the first 5 weeks, all of those games had game scripts that ran the damn ball. And we're thinking, all right, does this team not have the same recipe? You're 2-3 with at least 28 carries between these two in every game. Is that script finally broken? Since week 6, since the New England game, the Browns are 0-4 when they don't run the ball 24 times or more. And they're 3-0 when they run the ball, and they have ran the ball at least 26 times in all 3 of those wins. Bringing their total to 20-4 when Hunt and Chubb combined for 24 carries, and bringing their record to 3-13 when those two don't meet 24 carries combined.
I mean, it's a tale as old as time, is it not?
So we had a 5-game little sample where it didn't follow the script, and now we're looking at it as we're right back on track. Even with Deshaun, running the damn ball is still the way to go. All right, so as I mentioned before in the intro, we may have Brandon Kuglin call us in, and here he is on the line here, just as we were talking about the Browns. Cougs, we were just talking about how the Browns are 20-4 when they run the damn ball, and 3-13 when Chubb and Hunt do not run the ball at least 24 times. When it comes to what you saw from the Browns on Deshaun Watson's debut in Houston, do you think that running the damn ball is still the recipe, or do you think that Deshaun Watson is eventually going to return to form and we're going to put everything on his shoulders?
You know, I think there's definitely, well, first off, I don't know if we've talked about this on the show already, but big birthday shout out to the commission himself.
Thank you,
the
sir.
Man, the myth, legend.
Thank you.
Sorry I couldn't be there today. There's a small human in my back seat that has prevented me from being there, but he's cool.
Excuses.
But no, I have a weird view on this, right? Where all that Deshaun showed me is that we can add another vertical to running the damn ball, because he didn't look great passing the ball. I mean, some of the throws he had did hit receivers right in the hands and they couldn't bring it in. That comes with chemistry. That comes with timing. We'll figure that part out. But the biggest positive takeaway that I had from Deshaun Watson playing on Sunday was he could run the damn ball. He was able to evade defenders. He was able to stay on his feet. He didn't panic with pressure, which is, I mean, you would think that would be one of the bigger concerns, having a guy that's taken that much time off.
Yeah, 700 days.
Yes. Just a quick little 700, nothing serious. But he looked good on his feet. He looked composed. He looked confident. And to me, it's like, hey, if we are passing and you cannot complete the pass, run the damn ball. And now we can do that with a versatile quarterback like Deshaun Watson. So I'm pretty stoked. I don't think he looked great, but he walked out with a dub and he didn't look terrible. So I'm going to take that.
Okay, because we had, I mean, when I got back home here, as you know, as I told Paul and our listeners early in this episode, I didn't watch 1 minute of this Browns game. But if you would have just dropped me into Cleveland, Ohio, with no mention or no idea of what happened in this game, and said, listen to sports radio, what do you think happened in this game? I would have thought that Deshaun Watson was Jamarcus Russell 2.0. Listener, or I've heard people on talk radio say that if the Browns are going to contend, they need to bench him for Jacoby Brissett. What is your takeaway from just Watson in general and how much time he's going to need?
It kind of fits with, you know, what I've been saying all year. I love that early on in the season we said and committed to, you know, 2 games to shake the rust off. I think, you know, this you know, having Houston being the first game was a blessing in the sense that they're a god-awful team. And if we didn't win that game, and granted, we gave up a safety, the offense looked like hell. But, you know, Joe Woods gets to keep his job for another few months probably because of that game. It was a perfect situation to come back to. I think this week's going to be a little bit more of a challenge. And if he can't channel old Lamar at least a little bit more, like, I want to see improvement. I obviously don't want to see a step back. But I mean, if we can get through these first 2 games and start to see signs of the guy that led the league in passing a few years ago, then I'm okay. And, you know, I've already committed to not having a lot of stake in this year's team. Do I want to see them succeed? Of course, sadly. But I'm not living to lose right now. I'm living and dying by if Deshaun Watson can show signs that he is still the same guy. This first game, I'm giving him all the breaks that you can possibly provide in saying, you know, first game back, long break, timing, and you know, all these things that you have to, it takes time to build. I'm giving him this break. He's lucky. I'm a nice guy.
So how many games does this break last for you? Because I was mentioning it on this podcast earlier that it's very, very similar to the start of his career. And it's very ironic that this game mirrored his first game ever, because the first game he ever played was against Jacksonville in 2017. 12 of 23, 102 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. In his first game with us, he went 12 of 22 for 131, no touchdowns and 1 pick. Very similar stat lines. And then you look 3 games into his career, his second game, he went 15 of 24, 125, no touchdowns, no picks. He didn't do anything. His third game, 22 of 23, 301, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. And after week 3 of that season, he didn't throw any less than 3 touchdowns.
You did your research, my man. Wow.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm not. I shouldn't be. I shouldn't have even had that reaction, but wow. Good on you, sir. But yeah, no, I'm going to stick with what we've said all year, which is a 2-game buffer to just figure your shit out. And then you didn't hear that, buddy. and then, you know, I need him to show up. And we're not dealing with a rookie, Deshaun. So I think as a rookie, you're sitting there like, you can get X amount of time. You give him more time. You see glimpses. We know this man's ceiling. We know the team that is around him and their capabilities. I'm giving him this week and next week. But now this week that we are in, I want to see huge steps forward, at least with timing and chemistry and just completing some of these passes and getting things done, because, you know, it's not rookie Deshaun. There's still, and it's the Cincinnati Bengals. This isn't, we're not playing the Texans again. They're a good team. They're playing good football right now.
Although we do have their number.
We have it, but I've been told a time or two not to count my chickens before they hatch. And is that the saying?
I think so.
Whatever.
I mean, that's a thing.
Whatever. I don't even have chickens. But it's one of those things where, you know, I don't want to go in there and say, like, well, we'll always beat Cincinnati. Because, I mean, how long did Pittsburgh say that to us? You know, and you know, when the script is flipped, it's a different story. So I'm hoping that we see huge strides in this next game. I still think we run the hell out of the ball, and just, you know, kill them the way that we can. I think Stefanski has that. What did you see the stat that he's never lost to a cat related team?
I did not see that. No.
Yeah. So just keep that going. You know. Don't fuck with cats, but at the same time, we can, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good take. What do you think happens first? Do you think a Bengals loss to the Chiefs happens, or a Bengals win against the Browns happens first? Because Patrick Mahomes is 0-3 against the Bengals, while Joe Burrow is 0-4 against the Browns.
You know, I'm gonna give Joe his flowers and say that I think he'll beat the Chiefs before he beats the Browns. I like the fact that we're in the same state. He's an Ohio guy.
He always beats the Chiefs. So do you think that the Bengals lose to the Chiefs before they beat the Browns?
That's what I meant.
Okay.
I flipped it. I'm saying I'm giving Joe his flowers because I think that he'll – oh, no, sorry. You're right. He gets no flowers. Fuck those flowers.
You're going to give Mahomes those flowers.
Yes, Mahomes will take those flowers. But I like the fact that we have this – dynamic, and you know, Cleveland's never on the winning side of these kinds of stats or you know, like we hear it all the time. It's been 740 games since the Browns have done X, Y, and Z. Well, hell, I'd like for us to start the tradition of, man, Joe Burrow in his career, even though he's you know, let's say this is in 5 years, I'd love to hear the stat of Joe Burrow in his career has more losses at Cleveland Browns Stadium than any starter that they've had for more than five games, or something ridiculous like that.
Has more losses than Deshaun Watson does.
Hey.
Yes, and I'll tell you what, it reminds me of all those stats every time that they would bring up that Ben Roethlisberger has more wins in Brown Stadium than any of our quarterback, that kind of thing. I want that for us. So I'm gonna go ahead and say that Mahomes will eventually beat his Bengal demons, and the Browns will just continue kicking the crap out of that team from the south.
All right, fair enough. Give me a prediction for Browns Bengals this weekend.
I think it's gonna be a shootout. I really do. I think it's gonna be. I think both defenses suck. So I think that it's gonna be T. Higgins and Chase. Is Mixon going to be good to go? No, Mixon's not going to be good to go, right? Is he done for the year?
He's questionable.
No, from what people are saying, they think he's going to play this weekend. I mean, Stefanski said he expects him to play.
I hope he does.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying they expect Mixon to play this week, but there's nothing confirmed as of yet.
Well, I think it's going to be a good week to have any fantasy prospects or players on either team. Because I do think it's going to be a good offensive game, especially for running backs, or if you're a receiver on the Bengals. I don't see Deshaun taking that huge of a step forward with receivers, but I could see Amari Cooper coming back into form. Hopefully they build some chemistry. DPJ has been playing great. I hope that he goes off. It's a shame that I can't say any other receiver on the Browns will have a good game, because we have our slot receiver that is only effective if you literally hand him the ball.
he's now on the IR, by the way.
Oh, wow. Poor guy.
Yeah.
Must have been his hands. But, no, I think it's going to be an offensive shootout, and I see the Browns taking it. I would say 35-28.
All right. Fair enough.
Browns.
All right, buddy, you drive safe. We'll let you go from all this Browns talk here. I still need to figure out how we did. What?
I thought I was driving. Holden's driving. I'm not driving.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, that means that you guys are probably safer then. That's fair.
Exactly. Well, hey, love you guys. Happy birthday.
Thank you, buddy.
Go Browns.
Go Browns.
Love your neighbors. Support local business. So peace out.
Peace out.
All right, that was our third co-host, Brandon Cooks Kuglin, finding time out of his busy day to talk some Browns football with us. That should wrap up our Browns segment here. But before we wrap it up here, let me get your prediction here, Paul. What do you think happens this weekend, Browns Bengals?
I kind of like what he was saying with the offensive vibe. I do think there's going to be a whole bunch of offense because I think that this is going to be a raucous environment in Cincinnati for the first time, really. You don't see Browns-Bengals games in Cincinnati really get that raucous because most of the time, half of Paul Brown Stadium, or Paycor Stadium now, sorry, occupied by Browns fans. So I think that with everything, you know, given the circumstances, with Cincy coming off the year that they had that last year, with them being tied for first place in the AFC North this year, with the circumstances surrounding the Cleveland Browns quarterback situation, I think it's going to be a really intense crowd down there in Kentucky. And I think that's going to, I don't know if it's going to have a huge impact on the game. However, I still think the Browns are going to need another week to really come into form with the Deshaun Watson offense. I think they do show glimpses. However, 27-24 Bengals is going to be my guess.
Yeah, I'm going to go 34-20 Bengals.
DFS play. We're all smashing the Browns Bengals on DFS.
I do think that there is going to be a lot of... I don't think the Browns defense is going to be as dominant as they were in the first matchup between these two on Halloween. And I do think that there's still going to be rust from Deshaun Watson. And right now the Bengals are playing great football. Jamar Chase is back. Joe Mixon might be back. Even if Joe Mixon's not back, P. Ryan's no slouch.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that while the Bengals are flying high, I think that they're going to beat the Browns at home. I don't think the Browns offense is going to be able to keep up quite yet because of some of the rust from Deshaun. I mean, we saw what it took him. You know, I'm essentially considering Watson a 27-year-old rookie right now.
I think it's fair.
After 700 days off. So the first time around, it took him two games to really get the flow of getting, you know, a passing dominant game script to go in his favor. And I think that this is going to be more of the same. Ironically, his second game, his rookie season, he beat the Bengals 13-9. Mm. If our defense plays like that, then we will win 13-9.
Sure, it's nice to say that we own Cincinnati, but I certainly would not rest on that going into this week.
No, I'm not going to say that just because Baker and Jacoby Brissett could beat the Bengals, that it means Deshaun Watson's going to beat the Bengals yet.
Yet.
Later, he might. But moving on to another quarterback situation, probably the highlight from what I gathered from week 13 was the Jimmy G injury.
That's a big one.
Big time injury. Broken foot, not a Liz Frank injury though, so it doesn't end his season.
Yeah.
They said he would be out 7 to 8 weeks, which puts him returning anywhere between the divisional and NFC championship round if the Niners were to make it that far. The quarterback now is Brock Purdy, who went 25 of 37, not bad. 210 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick, not bad. Against Miami, not a bad team.
Mm-hmm.
In a 33-17, very good win. Can the 49ers stay hot with Brock Purdy as opposed to what they got from Jimmy G?
Stay hot? I don't know if I will say stay hot. Can they continue winning football games? I think I would say yes, because this is a team that is not dependent on quarterback play. This is a team that is built around every other facet of the game on both sides of the football, right? They have
defense,
talent
ball.
Everywhere. Yeah. They have talent everywhere besides quarterback. And Brock Purdy is a guy who came in through, they trusted him to throw the ball 37 times. This is a guy who...
That's a lot.
That's a lot of times for a guy who was drafted this spring as Mr. Irrelevant. He was the last pick of the draft.
Crazy.
This is a 7th round pick who's coming in now and filling some, I'm not going to say he's filling huge shoes. I mean, Jimmy G deserves his respect, no doubt about it. He's been to a Super Bowl. He's got a ring. Not that he was playing, but whatever. I think that they can operate just fine. I think that my concern is the viability of Brandon Ayuk. I think that significantly really hampers his impact from a fantasy perspective. But I think that with CMC as the checkdown god, I mean, I think that's going to help Brock Purdy. I think that a tight end of the caliber of George Kittle can only help him, and a wide receiver weapon, a really do-it-all weapon to the degree of Deebo Samuel can only help him. I think the way that the Niners are constructed, I think they're not going to call them a shoe-in to go to the even to the NFC Championship or the Super Bowl, but I think they should tread water just fine, despite being without. I mean, now they're on to their third quarterback of the season. So
yeah, that's crazy.
It's a lot to consider, but I think with, like I said, with the way they're constructed, with the, we know Shanahan's a mastermind at what he does. I have a lot of confidence in the Niners to close out this season strong, despite having Brock Purdy as the starting quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what Jimmy G was asked to do, are there any two weapons on any team that are, when you're not considering like down, I'm not talking about like the Justin Jeffersons, Cooper Cups of the league, but if there's any two weapons in the league that you want to throw the ball to around the line of scrimmage just to get them in space, are there any two better weapons for that better than Debo and CMC?
Not that I can think of on a single team. No.
I mean, they're the two best weapons, possibly one and two in the league, of throwing the ball to at the line of scrimmage and letting them do their thing and getting the yards after the catch.
Yak.
Just pile on the yak yards. And basically, the only thing Brock Purdy's going to have to do
is not turn the ball over.
Is not turn the ball over and make four or five throws in the rare scenario that San Francisco gets themselves into third and eight, third and seven. But their offense is designed to never let them get into those situations. They're meant to get into third and two, third and three, third and four, where the entire offensive playbook is open with both Debo and CMC. And on top of that, Kittle and Ayuk. Like, there's weapons across the board.
Yep.
All to get 4 yards. It's impossible to defend, no matter who your quarterback is. Now, from a fantasy perspective, I really think that the Jimmy G injury is a good thing for CMC owners. In this game against Miami, CMC 17 for 66 and no touchdowns rushing, 8 for 80 receiving with a touchdown. Debo went 4 for 5 rushing, 6 for 58 receiving. Both of them received 10 targets, and both of them are the keys to this offense around the line of scrimmage. Neither of them are really deep ball threats. So with Brock Purdy now, and San Francisco wanted nothing to do with Baker Mayfield, so that shows that they did not panic when Jimmy G went down. They're handing the keys to Brock Purdy with the expectation that run game will keep them in third and manageable, and the weapons will keep getting them first downs. And I think if you're a CMC owner or a Debo owner, the Brock Purdy emergence into the San Francisco offense and the Jimmy G injury is just going to impact or positively impact CMC and Debo's stock for the remainder of the year. CMC, as long as he stays healthy, will remain the RB1 for the rest of the year because he's going to get a healthy dose of targets, double-digit targets in week 13. He may get double-digit targets every game the rest of the year. And if that's the case, he's your RB1 in PPR for the rest of the year, and he could carry teams to championships in 2022.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's funny that you say that the Niners had no interest in Baker Mayfield because no other team in the entire National Football League, if you're ready to segue into the next segment.
Yeah, our last bit of major information from week 13.
Not a single team in the National Football League outside of one. The former Cleveland Rams / St. Louis Rams, now current Los Angeles Rams.
The former Super Bowl champion Rams.
The reigning Super Bowl champion Rams.
Yes.
Were the only team in the National Football League to put in a claim once Baker Mayfield fell to the waivers after he was granted his release by the Panthers.
Do you think that Baker asked for a release specifically because Jimmy G got hurt?
That'd be interesting. I don't know.
I feel like he saw an opening there and is like, I'm not getting my dues in Carolina. I see two openings here.
You know?
You could go to... I mean, I didn't think LA was an option.
No.
But he could have been like, there's LA, there's San Fran, there's two options here that I could go to and help right now. One of them is a playoff contender. I'm betting when Jimmy G got hurt, he's like, I have my eye on a Super Bowl contender right now. I can go help them and save my career.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't take the bait.
Makes sense, though.
Their rival did.
Uh-huh.
The rival that is tanking, tanking without a draft pick.
Are they 3-9 now?
Yeah, they're not good.
Mamma mia.
I mean, but to be fair, Cooper Kupp's
they've
out.
Had a lot of shit.
Aaron Donald's out.
Yeah.
Allen Robinson was a ghost, and he's still out. Matt Stafford is out. So they have a lot of injuries to deal with. Their defense has not been a shell of what it was last year.
Not even close.
OBJ got hurt in the Super Bowl. He didn't come back.
I guess you can officially count OBJ going to the Rams as out at this point.
Oh, yeah.
If you couldn't do it before.
If OBJ has any interest in playing for a Super Bowl contender this year, he's not returning to the Rams.
And he sure as hell ain't playing with Baker, Reagan, Mayfield.
The worst part about it for the Rams is that you sell your soul for a quarterback in Matt Stafford.
Fuck them picks.
You give up all your picks. And now that pick is like the third overall pick next year.
Hey, that's... Hey, I mean...
Do they still win the trade just because they have a ring?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree. 100%.
If you pull NFL fans, I think 90% of them would take 5 years of mediocrity or worse to get one ring. Because there's, what, 12 teams in the NFL without a ring?
I mean, we have the Browns who have
I wasn't even trying to take the low-hanging fruit there, but yeah.
They've sucked for 20 years without a ring.
Sure
have. I would take another 20 years of what we just had if you gave me a ring this year.
Based off my experience as a Cavaliers fan, I would absolutely take another 20, 30 years of wandering in the wilderness to get that one championship because I'm riding on that forever.
Just give me one.
Just give me one. One before I die.
Just one before I die. The motto of Cleveland sports. But getting back to the Rams here, I do think that the Rams won that trade when it came to Matt Stafford because even though there's a lot of people saying, oh, Jared Goff's having a better year this year. Yeah, Matt Stafford's hurt. Like, Matt Stafford's on the IR.
He's a Bruce spine.
Of course he's having a better year. The Lions are still 8-20 since that trade went down.
They're what, 4-7 right now?
5-7.
5-7?
5-7 with a favorable schedule to end the season. Somehow they're magically favored over the 10-2 Vikings this week.
It's a trap.
I don't know how that works. I'm picking the Vikings. Fuck the Lions. But
and
I don't
the Tigers
care.
And the Bears.
Oh my. I don't care what the Lions makers say. I do not trust the Lions. That game is going to be a shootout, though, for you DFS players. Play all of your Lions and Vikings this week. But getting back to the Rams. Can Sean McVay and the Rams save Baker's career? Because as I said, spine injury to Matt Stafford, he may retire after this year. That's a very viable option for Matt Stafford. A double-digit year vet coming off an injury on a team that is going to need to rebuild with no first-round pick in a draft loaded up with quarterbacks. Without that first-round pick, you can't draft a quarterback. They take Baker Mayfield's contract. And I'm assuming that that means that they're putting some trust into Baker Mayfield as a former number one overall pick to audition to see what he's got. Sean McVay is considered an offensive genius. Can the Rams and Sean McVay save Baker's career?
Tell you what, if there's a coach that can do it, I think it's him. He's on the short list at least with him, with Shanahan, and maybe that's probably about it, honestly. I'm actually kind of excited to see if Baker can produce in that offense that's been just so dead all season long.
Yeah.
And they have, I mean, there's no running game to speak of. Allen Robinson is a ghost out there when he's on the field. So,
Cooper Kupp's out.
I mean, Baker's got a tall task in front of him, but if there's an offensive mastermind that can hopefully put him in position to at least not even say do great or get him a big, this is a contract year for Baker and this is his third team.
Yeah. Already.
Yeah. Which is huge. So Baker,
his third team in a year.
You don't see that in contract years for a number one overall pick.
And mind you, the Raiders go to the Rams.
On Thursday. Tomorrow.
Tonight, for our listeners.
Tonight, that's right. Yep.
I mean, our listeners will be listening to this on Thursday. So tonight, as you're listening to this, Baker Mayfield could start like 48 hours after he was claimed by the
Raiders. That would be something else. Thursday night never fails to give us the craziest of storylines. But yeah, you know, I'm excited to watch it. I'm not excited to watch Baker go against Russell Wilson on Christmas. I will definitely be watching NBA basketball in that time slot. I can't believe they can't flex out of that. But anyways, definitely looking forward to see what he can do. I think at this point he's playing for a training camp job. I don't know if he's going to come back with the Rams next year. It depends a lot on Stafford. Depends on what direction they're going with. But
I mean, I feel like it's going to be hard for Baker to look good for this current Rams team.
But if he does look good, I mean, I think he will be competing for a starting job somewhere next year. I mean, the Colts, they're always right there.
Who are the other options for quarterbacks? If Matt Stafford were to retire, who are the other options for the Rams when it comes to quarterbacks?
And obviously, I think he would have I mean, they're not picking the quarterback, I'll tell you that.
No, I mean, unless they're doing, the second round? I don't even know if they have a second round pick. Third round, maybe?
They might not. I don't know. But they got a ring for it, so whatever. But yeah, I think that's probably best case scenario for Baker is if Stafford's like, well, this injury is just too much to come back from. I'm in my mid-30s. I got a family at home.
Have a ring.
Yeah, what else is there to win? What else is there to do? And I mean, he's proven everything in his career. We've said for how many years now, the only thing Matt Stafford is missing is a ring.
And he got it.
And he got it.
And now he's hurt. So what's
he's got nothing left to prove. So I think that's probably best case scenario for Baker Mayfield is if he comes out this year and plays average to slightly above and at least gets an invite back to spring training.
Like, we know where your head's at.
Back to training camp.
I mean, I know my fantasy season has sucked, so I'm looking ahead to baseball. Oh, but man. You need to focus in on football. But you still got championships to win.
You know what I'm saying? I think that's Baker's best. That's the inside track for Baker is to play okay this year.
As we have MLB Network on our TV up here.
This is on you. This is your TV. My fault. Yeah. But, yeah, no, if Baker can come out this year, play okay, you know, even put up, like, your prototypical Baker lines of, like, 190 yards through the air and 2 touchdowns on a pick.
Yeah.
Like, do that every game for the rest of the season, and he's got a spot in a training camp somewhere. Win a couple of them.
He can beat the Raiders.
He didn't last year. Oh, he wasn't playing that game. Never mind.
No, he wasn't. But I'm saying, tonight, as yes. our listeners, I yeah. think that the Rams could beat
Although the Raiders. The Raiders are now the most popular defensive streaming option in all of fantasy football.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, he's coming in the week of.
Doesn't know the playbook.
So I really think that, actually, the last question I have on this topic, and pretty much the last question I have of our podcast this week, of the topics that we have here, let's say that Baker does do enough to get re-signed by the Rams. And obviously they don't have the draft capital to bring in a young quarterback that they want to be their franchise guy. They're going to need to rent on a rebuilding Rams team.
Jacoby Brissett.
That'd be so funny if it's Jacoby Brissett and Baker Mayfield in LA next year. On a rebuilding Rams team that would still have Cooper Kupp, because I think Cooper Kupp just re-signed there.
Yep.
Cooper Kupp, Allen Robinson, you got Cam Akers, Van Jefferson, and obviously Sean McVay. If Baker Mayfield were to re-sign there and be the Rams week one starter of 2023, what are we doing to the Rams' offensive weapons? Do we think that Sean McVay is a good enough offensive coach to elevate those offensive weapons in the best scenarios? Or do we continue to think that Baker Mayfield is going to give all of his number one receivers the DJ Moore treatment, the OBJ treatment, and be essentially a wide receiver one killer for fantasy football next year? Basically, this question's highlighting Cooper Kupp.
Mm-hmm. I think that Baker is kind of a Matthew Stafford light in that he takes on that gunslinger persona, but he's just not quite as effective as Matthew Stafford in that role. So I think this knocks down the value of most people in that Raiders in the Rams offense, Cooper Kupp included. I think Cooper Kupp's value drops a little bit. It doesn't tank necessarily. I think he drops from a 5 ADP in PPR, 5 overall ADP, to probably a mid-second rounder, because I just don't trust Baker Mayfield to get the ball to him consistently enough without turning the ball over or missing the target entirely. Because we've seen what happens when Baker tries to force targets to star receivers. We've seen what happens. It doesn't always work out. I think that type of thing, and that offense is still going to feed through Cooper Kupp unless something happens that is unforeseen now, because they have no running game to speak of. Their running game is in shambles. So I don't know how that offense is going to be complementary to each other. And yeah, I mean, Cooper Kupp still has value, tremendous value with Baker Mayfield if they play together on the field at the same time. But I do think that his value does take a hit if Baker Mayfield is the week one starting quarterback next year for the Rams.
Okay, that's fair. I really think that it's a tough decision because as I mentioned to you before, I'm looking at all of the players that I ignored their situation and I said, this guy is talented and their offense should be okay. You know, Deontay Johnson, Alvin Kamara, those type of players where I'm essentially learning my lesson from some of my missed draft picks this year. If the Rams don't have a quarterback situation solved by next year, I don't know if I can trust Cooper Kupp.
I don't blame you at all. What's your floor for taking him?
If Baker's the quarterback?
Yeah, we'll say Baker.
Okay, if Baker, let's say in the situation that Matt Stafford retires, and it's Baker Mayfield, John Wolford,
Bryce Perkins,
Jacoby Brissett as their QB room. I would actually trust Jacoby Brissett more than anyone else in that room. But if we're putting I'm drafting Cooper Kupp based on that quarterback room, and Baker is the presumed starter, I'm not touching him till the third or fourth.
I think third is fair, yeah.
I think end of third there, because I think next year, from the lessons that I've learned from this year's draft class, one, I really got burned by the tight end position. So obviously the Kyle Pitts idea, like going for 22-year-olds that you're expecting to make that second-year leap, that was rough. I also got burned by going too old, Alvin Kamara, that sort of deal. In next year, I'm going for first contract, highly stable situations early in drafts. And the only way that I really think it's going to hurt me is if a injury happens. I think that if I draft Cooper Kupp earlier than that third round, there's more ways that he can hurt me than just injury.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Baker Mayfield gives him the DJ Moore treatment, I got burned by DJ Moore this year because of Baker Mayfield. And when PJ Walker was in there, DJ Moore did fine. So I don't know if I trust Baker Mayfield to give Cooper Kupp enough volume, enough on-target passes to verify his draft stock. So that's why I would be very, very weary of spending the same draft stock on Cooper Kupp next year as was spent on him this year.
I agree. Now, I do have a question, though, because...
What's that?
While we're talking about lessons learned and your outlook, I know it's very, very early to have this conversation.
Very early.
But are there
I'm already starting.
Are there any players that you passed on largely this year, players that you intentionally have little to no shares of that you regret taking that route with? We've taken, I mean, we've talked about the opposite, but now are there any players that you've had little to no shares of
in the ones that by were like off the radar but yeah. are now on the radar?
By design, yeah. Guys that you missed out on by design that are now making you regret that decision in August.
Amon-Ra St. Brown.
AMS, whatever, yeah.
AMSR,
yeah.
Yeah, I thought for sure last year that Amon-Ra St. Brown was a product of a high-volume offense that was losing a lot that didn't have any of their targets healthy. He was a rookie with not a lot of draft stock, but he had a good profile physically. Had the production coming out of, was it USC?
I couldn't tell you, honestly.
Arizona State?
I forget colleges so quick.
I mean, he had a good draft profile coming out of USC, and he didn't have the draft capital, and I didn't trust where he was on the depth chart for that Lions offense, even though he had the physical profile, but the physical profile can lie. Look at Jamarcus Russell, look at anyone that, you know, profiles as a freak, quote-unquote, athlete that just doesn't pan out in the NFL, and I didn't give him the respect he deserved for his end of the season last year. And mind you, he's been aided by some injuries again this year. The fact that Williams has not played pretty much the entire year. He took, what, 3 snaps this week?
I know it's single digits.
As his first action of 2022.
Yep.
DJ Chark has been out a good chunk of the year. TJ Hockenson got traded.
True. That's a big one.
So, I mean, he's essentially in the same situation right now where all of the weapons around him are also gone. But I think that they have realized that they can put him as their number one and all of those weapons below him have fallen off to the wayside. So he's their number one regardless. And I did not give him that respect because I thought that DJ Chark would still be involved. I thought Williams would be involved earlier this year. Or earlier than he returned this year, I should say.
Yeah, you and me both.
And I also thought that DJ Chark, Hockenson, and Williams would all be involved more, leaving less targets for him to be the number one. Turns out that all of them have had their issues either traded, injured, or, you know, haven't even seen the NFL field yet. Therefore, you know, Amon-Ra has the same type of production in this year as he did at the end of last year. And I think he's earned number one receiver role in that offense until Williams takes the field. Because I do like Williams' talent more than St. Brown's.
Do you think Williams gets unleashed this season? Or are we waiting until next season on that?
I don't think he's going to get unleashed, but I think he's going to get some reps. I think he's going to get some NFL action under his feet. I wish I wouldn't have drafted him.
Dude, I have him everywhere.
I stashed him on so many IRs at the end of a lot of drafts.
A waste of a roster spot right now. Because
I just figured that I can add him to the IR, pick up the kicker that I didn't draft.
Yep.
And then my team would be set for later in the year. But I really don't think he's going to be a factor this year. And
but you can't drop him yet?
No, because as soon as you drop him, you know what he's going to do. Get 50% snap rate.
Yep.
Get 10 catches.
Yep.
So, and I think a big factor of him not seeing the field yet is the boost in value for Amon-Ra. So, of course, if I buy into ARSB for next year, you know what's going to happen. Williams is going to take over as the number one receiver. Yep. And Amon-Ra is going to be a boomer bust wide receiver too. That's exactly what's going to happen. If I don't buy into him, he's going to stay at wide receiver one numbers. Just
easy, man. Next year get here when it gets here. Exercise those demons now, all right? I know this year's been tough, but
This is just how I'm feeling right now. Where it's like,
trust me.
I feel like if I do one thing, I know that the other thing's going to happen.
You sound like a Cleveland fan.
My Cleveland fandom has bled into my fantasy production. And usually I'm able to keep those two separate, but not this year.
Maybe next year.
That's always next year. That's the motto. All right. That was episode 97 of the Corner Sports Podcast. We talked a little Deshaun Watson. We talked some Jimmy G. Talked some Baker Mayfield. Talked some Lions weapons. And on this episode that happened to occur on my birthday, thank you all for listening. You can follow us on all of our social medias, which is at Corner Sports on Facebook as well as TikTok, Corner Sports FS on Twitter, and The Corner Sports on Instagram. We will be back with all of our fantasy football coverage this weekend. I apologize for not being as on top of things as I usually am, as I was in Cancun this weekend. Not able to really post a lot of the start sit questions that I would have liked to. I still got to everyone that was sent to me, but I did not really reach out and ask for those questions to be sent over my way. But this week, we're back at it in week 14, getting ready for the fantasy football playoffs. Cougs should be joining us next week as we're back on our normal schedule. And Paul, what do you guys say for the fans?
Yeah, you heard the man. You know where to find us, you know how to find us, you know when to find us. Shout out to the motherfucking birthday boy, the commission himself.
Thank you.
As you enter your Jim Brown year, your goat year, congratulations. Shout out to Cougs and Mini Cougs for making their cameo on today's episode.
Special guest on the guest line.
Yes. Peace out. And shout out to episode number 97. Shout out to former second round pick of the Cleveland Browns, Jabal Sheard.
Oh, good one.
Shout out to Jabal Sheard, number 97. Thank you all for listening, taking the time. Give us the feedback. You know the drill. 5 stars, all that. Subscribe, rate, tell a friend. And with that, I will pass it on to the voice of Brandon Cougs Cooglin.
Brandon Cougs Cooglin.
Love your neighbors. Give somebody a hug today. Support local business. Peace out.
I love how when you guys were texting the chat about what was happening with Utah and USC, uh-huh. I'm very drunk and I have no idea what's going on, but I am excited.
Yep, got the Buckeyes back in.